So this is a bit weird, isn't it, Glyn?
What's that?
Because I can't see you, and you can't see me. So having spent months sitting on benches on tops of hills or hill forts, having the awful experience of having to look at each other whilst we record the podcast, I can't even see you today.
And that's because we've retreated to our bunkers.
We're in our bunkers, and with the news at the moment, that's probably the safest place to
Yeah,
be.
exactly. With all this stuff going on in the world, it's the safest place to be. It's just get into our nuclear bomb shelters, in secret locations in Europe, and
Yes.
because if all
To be.
if all goes to pot, the Hidden Wiltshire podcast will endure.
Yes. If everything else fails, you can always rely on the Hidden Wiltshire podcast. But anyway,
Okay.
let's get cracking.
So, welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast where we talk about things in Wiltshire that are hidden. My name is Glyn Coy, and I set this thing up a while ago. And we've been doing this podcast now for coming up to, well, almost 2 years. But with me, as always, I have my French model participant helper
French
bag carrier.
French model. Model what? Yes, it's Paul Timlett, Monsieur Paul Timlett again. And yeah, as you may have guessed, you're in Wiltshire and I'm back in France, using a bit of string and a couple of tin cans for communication. I think I said to you the other day when we were talking about preparing for this that the internet here is even worse than it was before. So I'm in the no north of Dordogne here for 6 weeks, and during the last French elections, President Macron made all sorts of ridiculous promises about rural broadband in France. So having got re-elected, it's actually got worse. And I walked down the road the other day to find our telephone cable, which brings our internet service up from the village at the bottom of the hill. The cable is actually lying in a ditch, so that might explain why the quality is not so good. So I apologise now. The quality won't be as high as it normally is. Plus the fact I may have avoided Rat Run Friday through Shooton. It is now lunchtime here on a Friday in rural France. And even though there's only about 30 inhabitants in this village, most of them seem to come home for lunch. So, and most of them seem to drive through the yard in front of our house. So you may well hear cars hurtling through, screeching through, and French voices, which I can do absolutely nothing about. So we'll just have to muddle through it.
Well, fingers crossed the string endures,
Yes.
and nobody cuts it. But of course, here in
Nobody
Wiltshire,
runs over. Nobody runs over it. More to the
yeah,
point, but.
here in Wiltshire, though, I mean, I, you know, talk about state of the art broadband. I've upgraded to a 1 gigabit connection now.
Oh, stop it. You tell me that every time we speak. I don't
Oh,
want to know.
have I mentioned that before?
Well, you may well have mentioned it a couple of hundred times.
The only problem
I
is with
think.
it's really fast, but occasionally the whole thing switches off. So, yeah.
I think their speeds here are less than 1 megabyte. I mean, this is almost a dial-up. Because I've been doing a lot of photography, and the light here at the moment is just astonishing. I was out at sunrise this morning taking photographs over a lake, which is I'd say it's owned by some friends of ours, but they've got an old mill by the lake. I don't think they own the lake, but they own the mill. And I was taking pictures down there at sunrise, and it was just breathtaking. You know, the sun coming up and the mist, and just beautiful, so quiet. But so I've been uploading the odd photograph or two, and I mean, it can take all day to upload one photograph. It's just mad.
Okay, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed that we don't
Yeah,
have any
yeah.
outages. But if we do, I'll just edit them out anyway and make this all seamless because we're good
It
like that,
is,
very
as ever.
professional.
Yeah. So this is number 40, isn't it? This is episode 40, by the way.
Episode 40. So we've been doing this for, as I said, almost 2 years now. So 40 is quite an achievement. So should we talk about the last few weeks in Wiltshire? I noticed actually in your posts lately on the website, you seem to have developed an obsession with churches.
I've become spiritual.
Yeah. That's what happens when you get older, you see. A man of your years,
Well,
you
do you know
think
what?
about.
It steady on because I'm not the only one. Because Elaine Perkins has been posting a fair bit about churches,
Yeah,
so
I
you're
know.
tarring her with the same
I
brush.
Oh, dear me. I need to be careful
Well,
what I say,
at
don't
least we're doing something because
Yeah, that's true.
somebody has been noticeably absent from the Facebook group and the blog site at the moment.
Yeah,
I won't
I've been.
say who that is, but I'm looking at you, Glyn.
Yeah, well, the thing is, though, when I created this vast empire of Hidden Wiltshire, my goal was to become a backseat driver, so I get a team of people that just do all the work, and I
Yeah, you
take all the
just
credit.
delegate everything. Yeah.
Exactly.
You
So it's
take
working.
all the
It's
credit. You take all the credit and all the money.
Oh, yeah, I'm getting rich off the back of everybody else, you see.
You
So,
are. Yeah, I
but
know.
actually, even though I haven't contributed anything, in fact, I've contributed diddly squat over the last month. There's been loads of stuff been put on the website.
There
So,
has. It's extraordinary. When I
yeah.
was going through it for the, because we do a little running order for this as to what we're going to talk about, because it's not entirely made up. Well, it's made up, but it's not entirely off the cuff. But yeah, I was going through what's been on the Facebook group, in the blog, on the blog site, and yeah, there's loads of it. So in my list, we'll talk about Elaine. I mean, she's an absolute star, she really is. So she's done one, two, three blogs, but then there's any number of Facebook posts as well that go along with that. So she wrote a blog about, actually, I'm not sure she put this on the blog site, but Fisherton Anger, which is an old ancient area of Salisbury, where apparently Elaine once lived. But Fisherton Anger is around the area of Fisherton Street, or was around Fisherton Street, the station, is it Fisherton Island, they call it? So all that end of Salisbury, just off the centre. That's a really interesting post, actually. I can't remember if she did a blog or not, but I never heard of the name Fisherton Anger, and some of the places that's, I mean, really seriously hidden. And then, of course, she's embellished it with all the history. So absolutely fascinating. So that's if you haven't read it, certainly get on the Facebook site if you're not already on there, and have a look at that. She did another one about, I think it was a couple of posts which she then wrote up as a blog about Alderbury, the village of Alderbury, which is just off the A36 south of Salisbury on the road to Southampton. And it's quite interesting, actually. It talks about her challenge in pursuing some rights of way. Actually, I think that theme spilled across into two blogs, because the other one, which again I'd never heard of, something called the Borbatch Chantry in the woods, which I think is the same area. But she was talking about some rights of way, which instead of being blocked by a farmer or a broken star, was blocked by river. So the right of way would just end at a river, which I
The thing is on,
assume.
I know the thing is on those, you've got a right of way on both sides of the river. So
Yeah.
there must have been a ferry there or something at one point, or
Well, yes, there was one of them, and I can't remember which it was. She said that there used to be a little boat that would take people across. I was just imagining that. But there was another one, the stepping stones. Actually, yes, there was a ferry, because I think she spoke to somebody and they said, well, the the ferry that stopped now, because these days nobody walks anywhere and there's nobody to ferry across. And I think the river was too deep to wade across. But yeah, again, two fascinating reads. Places I've obviously heard of Alderbury, but knew nothing about it. And the Borbatch, I'm not even sure if I pronounced that correctly. Never heard of that either.
Yeah.
So they're two really good reads. Our chum Hedley Thorne, who's a terrific drone photographer, he put some great shots up of Hip and Scoom and Fosbury Camp, the settlement that stands above Hip and Scoom. And that was really interesting to see Hip and Scoom and Fosbury from the air.
Yeah.
So having been there numerous times, you and I have been there a few times, and we did a Wiltshire Museum guided walk around there. To see it from above, and particularly Fosbury Camp, you get a real sense of the scale and indeed the shape of it. So that was terrific to see that. And Hedley did something else working with I don't know if he's a new follower to the podcast, but he's new on the Facebook site. Paul and Rebecca Whitewick, who've got a very successful YouTube channel.
Yes.
So Hedley did some drone photography for them, which was part of the photography was around the Wansdyke. So there's some great aerial shots of the Wansdyke. And I know you have as well. You've done some great drone photographs of the Wansdyke. But the fascinating bit, or the bit that I found fascinating there was basically Paul's YouTube video is about open access areas, which you and I have spoken about at great length in many podcasts. And certainly when Stu and I are out walking, we quite often, it's a subject that always comes up. So open access areas on the 1 to 25,000 OS map, these are the areas which are bounded by a sort of kind of a beige colour. And it'll bound a whole area, and what it means is that you're allowed to roam. You have right to roam within that boundary, and I think where it's bounds are wood. It's a different colour, but quite often these open access areas they're basically islands. So there's no public right of way to get into these open access areas. So the open access areas were created by the Crow Act, the Controlled Rights of Way Act. And I can never remember the date of that. Is it 2014? It's a relatively recent act, maybe a little bit earlier. And it opened up a bit more of England to public access, because as people have heard me rant endlessly about that, we only have access in England to 92% of the country. And prior to the Crow Act, I think it was only, we only had access, sorry, we don't have access. It's the other way around. We didn't have access to 98% of the country. And then the Crow Act opened up a bit more, and we no longer, so now we don't have access to just 92%. Which, you know, I always find astonishing, but I know people say, well, there's still plenty of public rights of way to walk on. But the Crow Act was an incomplete piece of legislation, and I won't go into the technicalities of it, but there was intended to be another bit of legislation or regulations that would basically explain how you get into these open access areas, or clarifies your rights to these open access areas. So how do you get from a public footpath across a private piece of land and get into the open access areas? And there's a lot in Wiltshire of open access areas which are little islands, and that's what Paul's YouTube video about, and it was really interesting. And basically the answer is, at the moment, pending any new regulations, which seem unlikely in the current climate, you are allowed to take the shortest, most direct route from a public right of way into the open access area. So it's a mess. Somebody and it's, I'm afraid it's in the hands of politicians. They need to correct this because it's just a, it's, it just opens up the potential for conflict with between, you know, walkers and landowners.
Yeah.
So it it needs clarifying. It needs rectifying.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing that, sorry.
I've got to carry on.
The other thing that Paul wrote about on the Facebook group was enclaves and exclaves in Wiltshire. So he was looking at some old maps, and there was one area particular, not far from Hipponscombe, in fact, and it's a little piece of, is it Berkshire or Hampshire? A little piece of Hampshire that sits in Wiltshire.
Yeah.
So it's Hampshire, but it's completely surrounded by Wiltshire. And there are a number of these little enclaves dotted around the country. And indeed, there are exclaves, as he called them, where we've got little bits of Wiltshire sitting in neighbouring counties. Now, somebody did explain that this was on the Facebook group. This is something to do with administrative areas. So this is a historical thing. I don't think any of these enclaves or exclaves exists anymore. But what we do get is basically a salient. So a great example is Inglesham. So if you look at the Inglesham blog that I wrote, so right up on the border with Oxfordshire and Gloucestershire, and it's Inglesham, and the church there is a little finger of Wiltshire that kind of pokes up into Gloucestershire and Oxfordshire. So it's surrounded on three sides by other counties, and it looks weird on the map, and you think, well, why isn't that just part of Gloucestershire or Oxfordshire? And Paul was sort of hypothesising that the enclave up around Hipponscombe, just north of Hipponscombe, and I can't for the life of me remember the name of the village, it'll come back to me in a bit, which on a map that he was looking at, an old map, was an enclave. He thinks that it was actually joined, and it was to Hampshire, and it was actually a salient of Hampshire cutting into to Wiltshire. But that opened up a whole debate, and all the old regulars piled in on that one, particularly Steve Dewey, because he loves his maps and he writes away, so he piled in on that, and that was a really interesting discussion. And then what else has been there? Colin Fry put some photographs of Stanley Bridge and Titherton Lucas, the church at Titherton Lucas, which Stu and I went very close to when we did the Maud Heath's Causeway walk. In fact, Stanley Bridge was where we ran into real difficulties with the right of way, which just stopped. But Titherton Lucas, we didn't go to. It wasn't on the route, but it looks to be a fabulous church there. And speaking of churches, the blogs that I've put on the website, because I'm conscious of the fact not everybody's in the closed Facebook group. And basically, as we said before, that is for people who want to contribute, not just photographs of their dog, but contribute, you know, meaningful stuff about hidden locations, things that people may not know about, with photographs and a bit of research, a bit of history. That's what the closed group is about. So I, just conscious of the fact not everybody's in there, I try and do most of my little blogs. I put them on the website as well, where everybody can see it. So I did one about Orchardston and the two churches there, because Orchardston's a very small village, but it has two, you know, really quite handsome churches. And then I did another one where Stu and I did a walk down to Stapleford to basically find where the River Till flows into the Wylie River, and basically we found the end of the River Till, if you like. And just by pure good fortune, we also found a pub. So we spent as much time in the pub, I think, as we did looking at where the Till tips into the Wylie. But that actually is a long walk for us from shooting all the way down there. That was a long day's walk.
Yeah, that's a long way.
But it was a good one. But we did need that beer. I
Yeah.
And we did walk and we didn't drive. So,
Yeah.
and finally, I did another little blog about another church, St. Andrew's Church in Rolleston, which is on the edge of Shrewton. So basically, all of this stuff was around Shrewton based on walks that I'd done from home.
Yeah.
Because I can't afford to drive anywhere now. I can't afford the petrol, Glenn.
I did say when you go to France, you'll never get back.
No.
So
I tell you what, petrol, diesel are a lot cheaper here than it is over there.
Make sure you fill up, man.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Just
on Wiltshire Museum, you did you've done another walk, haven't you? A Wiltshire Museum walk. The last one. Is it the last one this year?
The last one this year. I need to get back to the museum with the next set of walks for next year. But yes, we did the last one earlier in September. I think it was the 11th of September.
11th, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, we did that over on Fifield Down. We went to the Devil's Den, walked through the valley with all the sarsen stones, and went up to the polisher stone, actually. And then came back around again, because it's quite a nice route back, walking through the fields, which are got some quite interesting Bronze Age field boundaries. There's just so much to see up there. It's absolutely fantastic landscape, and all open access, which is good.
Yeah, actually, there was one other thing I was going to mention. Wiltshire. Well, fortunately, it's Wiltshire. I'm reading a book at the moment, and I think I've mentioned this author before because I just love his work, Robert McFarlane. And the book I'm currently reading is called The Old Ways, and there's a subtitle to it, which I can't remember. But it's not about old ways of life, but it's old ways as in tracks.
And right, yeah.
In fact, not just, let's call it routes, because there's one in particular that was a route across the sea. But a chapter I read a couple of days ago was he and somebody else basically skied the Ridgeway across Wiltshire. And they finished up, by the sounds of it, they finished up in Orton Barnes. And they did it on cross-country skis. And I can't remember what year it was. I've got some photographs of my son tobogganing when he was a little lad. He's now 24. So he was a little lad on his toboggan, and he was loads of kids tobogganing in Shrewton. So it must have been that year, and I'm going to guess now that it was something like 2008, 2010, around then, when there was a big dump of snow in Wiltshire. So Robert McFarlane and his friends skied from somewhere around, and this is a bit of a segue, around Liddington Castle, that direction, and followed the Ridgeway. And this is the really fascinating bit. When they finished, and it was getting late, and they left their car or van somewhere, and they packed their skis up, and they were driving away, and I guess it was kind of a half light, and as they're driving along, McFarlane was in the passenger seat, and he saw this animal on the verge, the side of the road. And he said it had really sort of very muscular, you know, large shoulders, long legs. It was black and a long tail. And he looked at it and he thought, well, that's way too big for certainly for a cat and even for a fox. And he said, he turned around, he looked out the back window, and I guess the animal was lit up by the rear lights of the car. All he could see were these yellow, pair of yellow eyes staring at them from the side of the road. And he said to his friend, his driver, he said, did you see that? And he said, yeah. And he said, I think that was a black panther. And the guy said, yeah, so do I. And that follows from, there's quite a few reported sightings of black panthers in Wiltshire at about that time, and I also think I have seen one on Salisbury Plain just outside Shrewton. It's my aforementioned son Adam, he and I were doing a walk out there, and again it was late. Well, it was early evening. It must have been sort of winter, because it wasn't half light. The light was reasonably good, so that we had good vision, good visibility, and we watched something by a wood, no more than 250 meters away, and we were absolutely certain this was a very, very big black cat. And it was sort of mooching around by this copse where deer quite often hang out. And then it just very slowly walked into this copse, and we didn't see it again. So it'd be interesting to know if anybody else has got any stories about the Black Panther or panthers.
So, whilst you're talking, a quick Google search comes up with a whole host of news stories about Black Panthers in Wiltshire.
Yeah.
The first one is in May 2022, so in May this year. Huge panther spotted in Fovent man's back garden. So there's one in Fovent, apparently. I remember a few years ago there was a sighting on the outskirts of Trowbridge. I remember that was reported. So there's quite a few reports there. Yeah, here's the one from Trowbridge, 2007. 2020, police drone unit search for Black Panther in village. So we should open this up on the Facebook group and
social media. Definitely.
Let's start a Black Panther threat.
Yeah. Well, they're certainly bloody hidden, aren't they?
Yes. Well, that's fascinating.
Anyway, as I say, be careful out there.
Yeah. Did I tell you that while walking around a forest once, I saw a Bigfoot? No, I'm just... Starting up.
Was that on the way back? That was on the way back from the pub, was it?
Yeah.
I've seen all sorts on the way back from the pub, I can tell you.
It's amazing what you can see in Wiltshire after a few pints of the local beverages. Anyway, we better get on to today's topic, hadn't we? Because we're digressing.
We've been talking for half an hour already. We haven't even started.
I know. Right.
I'll get another letter of complaint from Stu.
Okay. Well, you can just rip it up and throw it in the bin again. Right.
Yeah,
okay. Music. Okay, so this week the topic is going to take us to an area of Wiltshire, actually, we don't tend to cover too much, but we probably should do more up that way. But on this one, we're going up to Aldbourne. And you did a walk up there that you published, actually, earlier this year, that also took in an abandoned old medieval village of Snap, I think it's called.
That's right. Yeah. It was March. I don't know why in my notes I've written March 2020. I keep writing 2020 instead of 2022. But thank God people don't write checks anymore. Otherwise my checks would all get returned. This is a walk that Stu and I did. I can't remember which day in March, but March 2022. And it's a walk that I've been meaning to do for a long, long time. Particularly to go and find the village of Snap. And again, it was this is another walk that was partly inspired by Andrew Rumsey, the Bishop of Ramsbury, because in one of his short YouTube videos, he went up there, and I was aware of this place and a long intended to visit it, but Andrew filmed himself walking in the wood and talking about it, so I thought, right, we must go and do this. So we Stu and I plotted this walk, and it was just over 10 miles, but there are opportunities to cut it a bit shorter. It was a fairly easy 10 miles because most of it is along two ridge lines. And you're starting at Audebourne, and you go up one ridge, drop down, cross over the whatever that B road is, the 4192, and then up onto the other ridge. Indeed, you're on the ridge way for part of it and come back down. So a lot of it is fairly level walking and high up as well. So the views, I mean, really my favourite sort of walk. On top of ridgeways, just immense views across Wiltshire. Unfortunately, it wasn't too good a day when we went. It was a bit grey. We parked up in the square in Audebourne, which is just outside the Crown pub. And the I mean, you can this is one you can follow along in the blog, the maps there and the description. So parked by the pub, and we bumped into somebody who's, because I wasn't really sure if we should be parking there, and this lady said, yeah, it's absolutely fine, you can park there all day, people do, but just be warned that a lot of parents come and pick up their kids from the local school, and they just park all over the square, and if you come back at the end of school, then you're likely to be blocked in. But we were fine. So we walked up the side of the Crown, and I think the road was called Green Street. And then you come onto the village green, which is a great big village green, and the church there, which I think from memory is something like 14th century, big church in front of you. And then over to your right, there's another pub called the Blue Boar, and I'll come back to that at the end, because that was and we did go in there at the end. You'll be astonished to hear that Stu and I went to the pub.
Well, I've been in the Crown.
Have you?
I've had a lunch in the Crown,
Well,
a couple of years ago.
we tried. We did try, but it was rammed. It was full of, I think, the local shoots or something. They were all in there, and as I said in the blog, it was, there was no COVID precautions being taken, and we looked in, and Stu and I said, don't fancy that, and that's why we went to the Blue Boar. But anyway, more of that later. So from the green, you go up this street to a place called Crooked Corner, which is only just a few meters up the from the basically you're on the right hand side of the church, and this road goes up and does a almost a right angle turn, and it's called Crooked Corner. And then up to the left was this very odd sort of kind of raised pavement, cobbled pavement. And having posted the blog, somebody, I think via the Facebook site or maybe on the blog, said that as a little girl that she used to walk down that pavement to go to school, down in the village. So it's, I mean, God knows how old that cobble pavement is. Very, very old, very worn, and when we went up there, very, very slippery, so we didn't use it, just walked in the road. But you follow either on the pavement or alongside it a little way, and then you what you're heading for is a I think it was a bridleway that forks off to the left. And this heads up to Sugar Hill, which is probably, I don't know, a couple of miles distant from the village. And this is really probably the most climbing you're going to do during the day, but it's just a very steady climb all the way up towards Sugar Hill. And of course, as you're going, the views open up, and they open up, and it's just it's like, I don't know. Some places you go and you just get everything at once, don't you? You get all the views at once, and but this, it just Wiltshire gradually reveals itself as you're walking up this bridleway. And again, it's such a shame that the weather wasn't better. So my photographs are not great. But as you head up this bridleway, there are, it felt like barrows, you know, round barrows, bowl barrows, just everywhere. And we came to what is called the Four Barrows. I think it's just called the Four Barrows. And there's a very good website, which I now can't find. It's I think if you Google Aldbourne and Barrows, you'll take you to this website. And I've got a feeling it's something to do with the Aldbourne History Society. I'm pretty certain it is. But it's an excellent website, and it will tell you in great detail the story about the different barrows that you find all around Aldbourne. But we came to these four, this first four, and there was a cairn to our right on the track, which is a quite a modern cairn. It's just a big pile of flints and other stones. And then just after that, there's these four barrows, and they're Bronze Age, and these were partially excavated by a guy who was quite prolific. I was going to call him an archaeologist, but I suppose they were archaeologists in those days. So this has been the late 1800s. So a guy called Canon Greenwell, who excavated a lot of barrows around this part of Wiltshire. So he excavated these barrows sometime between 1885 and 1890, and there were all sorts of finds in there. There were cremation burials, there were beads, amber beads, flint flakes, from napping flint tools, a dagger, a grooved dagger, and there were animal bones in there. And just down the hill, which you can't really see from this side of the ridge because you're climbing up onto a ridge all the time, but just to the west and below the site of these four barrows is another barrow which isn't far off the B4192, and there was the most amazing find here, which I think, if I may be wrong, but I think Greenwell found this as well, but it's a funerary cup. But what's fascinating about this one, apart from the fact it was in really fine detail, and this was found in the barrow that I'm talking about, it was intact, but it also had a lid. Now I'm told that that's highly unusual, so it's in beautiful condition, and it had a lid. And this was sent off to the British Museum because it's such a rare find, and I don't know if it's still there, but it's been on loan to the Wiltshire Museum in Devizes for some time, and certainly it was in there last time I went up there, you know, to the Devizes Museum, and it's just the most beautiful piece. It really is. It's called behind, you know, beautifully lit and behind sort of thick glass, but it's if it's still there, it's well worth going to see. And then, as you continue along this bridle way, and still climbing on your way up to Sugar Hill, and there's another bolt barrow, yet another barrow, just off to your left in the field, which is a cultivated field, so you can't get across to it. But there's the thing that struck me about it, the sort of photogenic thing about it, was there's a lone hawthorn tree just perched on top of this barrow. But this is another one that Greenwell had excavated, and he found in there cremated remains of an adult in a, is it a kist or a cyst? Kist, C-I-S-T, which was covered by a cairn, and there was again another bronze dagger in there and a bone pin. So these were really, I don't know, I guess, as we always say, it points to a number of very important high status individuals that would have lived in this area in the, I don't know, what are we talking about, 2700, 2500 BC up to the Iron Age, around 700 BC. Yeah. You know, really high status individuals, particularly with the grave goods that you find with the burials or the cremations. So at this point you continue on for some way, there are more burial mounds. We got to a junction in with the Ridgeway at some point, and if I remember rightly, I can remember going left along it for a short way and then turning right, and we came to the edge of the escarpment. So we're looking down into the valley that contains the B4192, and you're looking right across to the other side of the valley and the ridge that contains the return route. And at this point, there are apparently some pillow mounds, so more burial mounds, but we couldn't see them. But if you look down towards the B Road, you will see another byway which wends its way down the escarpment, down to the valley, and then up the other side. And this is one opportunity to shorten the walk. So you could go cross the B4192 up to the other side and join the return leg of the walk, if that makes sense. And you can see it from a map. But
I'm looking at it now. I can see there's a definite,
clearly
marked byway that cuts out that whole section. It goes up towards Liddington Castle.
That's right. If you've got the time and the legs and you've got the light, it's well worth carrying on towards Liddington Castle. So basically, the bridleway or the track or whatever it is, you pass yet another. I think it's a long barrow, which is pretty indistinct, but you go right over its flanks. And then the track runs parallel to the B4192 until you get to a crossing point of the road, and you're right by Liddington Crossroads, just shy of there. And you cross over, and again you start to climb again, but not too steep. But it's worth just looking to your right, where there's a bunker, which we almost missed it. We almost walked past it. And this bunker was part of I've just called it a starfish site. I think it was a network of bunkers and sites that were built in World War II, where they set fire to these places. They create fires to act as a decoy for German bombers who were heading for Swindon. So from 10,000 feet up in a bomber, and you see all these fires, you think, oh right, those are the incendiaries from the Pathfinder aircraft, and they would drop their bombs short of Swindon. So this bunker was part of the Starfish network. So it's worth going in there and having a look. But for me, the really fascinating thing there was behind the bunker, and it was Stu who found it. He kind of disappeared behind the bunker and came back. He said, God, you've got to see this. Come and look at this. And it was like almost like a memorial wood, I suppose, is a way of describing it. And there were little gardens and memorials and votives hanging from trees. It's all modern. And there were football shirts, scarves up there. So a lot of people use this as a place to commemorate their members of their family. I took one or two photographs, but I only posted one because I don't know, just didn't feel quite right photographing all this. But nice spot. Unfortunately, it's as ever with some of these places, it's been not trashed, but there was a lot of litter lying around. So I don't know if people go up there and clear it up every now and then, but it was a shame that people had I don't know, desecrated it, if that's the right word, in some way. Anyway, it's from there, it's not far. There's a sort of permissive right of way which takes you around a couple of fields into Liddington Castle itself, which is a Bronze Age univalet settlement. So it's quite a big one. It's 3 hectares, so 7.4 acres. Oh, blimey, even my headphones, I can hear the aeroplane. Can you hear it?
Yeah, I can hear that.
Yeah, that's that sounds quite heavy. We're not that far from Cognac, where there's a French Air Force base where they train fighter pilots. So pretty much all day, every day during the week, we get these little Pilatus trainers buzzing around above the village, high up, playing at dogfights. But that one sounded a bit heavier. Anyway, Liddington
So
Castle.
Liddington Castle, you mentioned Bronze Age, is that right?
Yes.
So it must have been late Bronze Age, I would think, because those kind of structures tended to be appear in the Iron Age period.
Well, Uffington, the Castle of Uffington, that's Bronze Age. And that's huge. That's bigger than Liddington. So it's not that unusual. I mean, I'm very happy to be corrected. But when I was researching for the blog, it suggested Univalent. Because don't forget that it wasn't really until moving into the Iron Age that these things developed. Defensive purposes.
So the thing about the dating is, obviously it's very easy to say that's Bronze Age, that's Iron Age, but the reality is that you've got periods of time merging into to each other. So I'm just looking at Uffington, and that's described as an early Iron Age with underlying Bronze Age elements to it. So I think generally speaking, hill forts are regarded as Iron Age, but that could be a period of several hundred years,
But
and
they, as I understand it, Bronze Age people were building settlements. So not necessarily forts, defensive forts, but they're building settlements and enclosures, which, as you say, some were, because they didn't just turn the lights off on the Bronze Age and the lights
no,
on
exactly,
Iron Age. As you say, it transitioned over a period of, I
yeah.
guess, hundreds of years. And I guess some of these places having been established as settlements and enclosures in the Bronze Age, people continued using them and then adapted them for different purposes. As you say, it's the Iron Age man continued to use the site that had first been established by their Bronze Age ancestors.
Yeah, it says here on Wikipedia, Liddington Castle's late Bronze Age, early Iron Age hill fort. So it just reinforces that what we just said, which is you've got merging of technologies and periods and ways of life. I'm just making
Interesting
sure
thing
we get
about it.
these things correct though, because I don't want to get any more archaeology
No, another telling off.
folks emailing me with ticking me off for talking rubbish again.
I did research it before I wrote the blog, so it's not entirely made up. But the interesting thing about the Liddington Castle one is that there's in the middle of it there's a really deep pit, which has been partially excavated, but nobody really knows what it's for. Because I was thinking, well, was it for chalk, or maybe was it for tapping water? I mean, was it a well? I mean, but they just don't know.
Interesting, yeah.
Anyway, you backtrack from there. So unless you're going to go wandering over crops, which I would urge you not to do, you use the permissive path back to the Ridgeway, and you're then following the Wiltshire Ridgeway for some distance, and there's some earthworks that run parallel to it, and you're now on the opposing ridge to the one we walked up. So we're now turning and heading back towards Aldbourne. On the Western Ridge, the earthworks, I guess I think their purpose would have been boundaries, field boundaries, administrative boundaries, tribal boundaries, but they're quite extensive up there. But I'm just conscious of time. I'm not going to go every twist and turn, but. The next port of call, and you can follow the blog and see the directions. We're heading for Snap now, and Snap is it was down quite a deep, quite a, not steep, but it was a descending path that went down into a valley, and there was a wood, which in this wood, and the wood is bounded by a barbed wire fence, but it's all been trampled down and. So, I mean, it's lying on the ground, and lots of people clearly just step over it and into the wood. And this is where the village of Snap can be found, or the abandoned village of Snap. Which goes back to, well, there was a village recorded there in 1268, and that's how old it is. And then, as I say in the blog, in 1377, there were 19 poll taxpayers registered there. In 1733, there was thought to be in between 5 and 10 houses. By the 1841 census, there was a small farming community of 47 people. But then, kind of something happened, and by 1909 there were only two residents left. And what happened was competition from American corn, which acted to depopulate some rural communities, and people drifted away. And then there was a big dispute, and I need to go back into my blog where I describe this, and it was basically a local butcher from Ramsbury, which isn't that far away, and there was a bit of a to do about this. He bought it up. He bought the area. Here we are. So in 1905, a Ramsbury butcher, Henry Wilson, bought what was left of the village, and he was accused by the local MP of favouring the resident sheep over the remaining human inhabitants. And the MP described Wilson of being oppressive and tyrannical. Incensed by this, the butcher's son sued the MP for slander. So there was a big dust-up about all of this. But then a lot of the houses, which there's almost, well, it's just lots of rubble in there. There are stones lying around, tiles from roofs. There are even sort of remains of China dinner services. The army used it as gunnery practice in World War One, so a lot of it was obliterated. And then by the 1930s, there was only one house left. Anyway, it's absolutely fascinating and really atmospheric in there, and it's really quite eerie, you know, to think about people that once lived there. A bit like the what was the one above by Westwood, between Westwood and Alton Barnes. God, I've been there. Should remember it. That begins with S as well. But very, very atmospheric. But as you leave, your next point is Upper Upham, which sits on the hill above Snap, which apparently this is the site of another abandoned village, medieval village. But from what I could see, it's not accessible on the map. I think it's not open access. I think it's just in private. It's a private area, and I'm not sure what there is to see, but that is just I think on the east side of Upper Upham.
The other one you were just talking about near Alton Barnes is Shaw.
Shaw. I was thinking Sharp, but yeah, Shaw. That's right.
Yeah, Shaw.
Thank you. But up at Upper Upham, you've got Upham House. God, that's a tongue twister. There's a terrific old building. It's built in 1599 by the Goddard family, who were the lords of the manor of Swindon, and we were just amazed that it was, I mean, it looks kind of Elizabethan, but it's only grade 2 star, which is a pretty low listing, but incredible looking house, which I gather now has been divided into 3 flats. And there was quite a lot of work being done to it when we were there. They were doing some work on the roof, and it was surrounded by scaffolding, so it wasn't looking its best. But from there, we're on the last leg, heading back towards Aldbourne. We passed something called High Clear House. So not High Clear as in Downton Abbey, but it's spelled slightly differently, which apparently, again, is a beautiful house, but it's surrounded by private signs and CCTV signs, big hedge. So we couldn't see it. So don't know what's in there.
So just near there, actually, on the downland, just past High Clear House, is High Clear Down, which is actually listed on Wiltshire Wildlife Trust as one of their
Oh, it's one
pieces
of
of
theirs, is
land.
it?
Yeah, it's
Oh,
High Clere
right.
Down. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. And also just after there, we came to another barrow cemetery. It's called the Giant's Grave, and this is something else I'd long looked at on the map and thought I really must go there one day. And it was a slight, it's a bit of a letdown because Giant's Grave, there were four barrows there. Again, Greenwell had been at them as well. He excavated an adult cremation, two bone pins, and fragment of an arrowhead in the Giant's Grave itself. But Giant's Grave is a bell barrow, part of this barrow group. But it's in a wood, so it's kind of it's partially hidden, so not that striking to look at. It's a bit like Tin Head, I suppose. You can see it in the wood, but can't. You know, you can't really make it out that clearly. But from there, it was just a question of continuing along what is now a byway, all the way back to Aldbourne. And the difficulty was, as I've written in the blog, is you've got to walk at least for a short stretch along the B4192, which is a horrendous road. I mean, people drive down there at absolutely mad speeds. The verge is pretty wide, but it's still very intimidating to have these people hurtling past you, especially in the it was getting dark when we went down there. So you know, that's not an experience that I relish repeating. But just to finish off, we did end up in the Blue Boar pub, and this brings us back to another great link that Aldbourne has to history, and it was the. It was the pub in particular was a pub used by officers of the 101st Airborne Division of the American Army during World War II, and otherwise known as was it Easy Company?
Easy Company,
So they were based in and around the village, and the Blue Boar Inn was where the officers went, and it was strictly off limits to enlisted men. But you go in there, and there's all sorts of memorabilia from that period of history. And I'm looking at the photograph I took, and there's all sorts of things on the wall, and photographs and documents hanging on the wall. So it's a real history lesson just going in there. And it was a bloody good pub to boot. So, but yeah, that was it.
And Easy Company was also known as the Band of Brothers, of course, and there was a
Band of
whole
Brothers, yeah, from the TV
TV show.
series,
Yeah, TV
which is
show
a
all about it.
terrific, terrific series.
Yeah,
It's very,
it's
very good.
brilliant. The other thing, Aldbourne, actually the Blue Boar is also famous, believe it or not, for being in Doctor Who. John
Yes, that's
Pertwee.
right. Yes, I'd forgotten that. There was pictures all over the pub of John Pertwee filming outside the church around the green there. And it's funny actually when you look at those old episodes how crude it was because it was a long time ago. It was just, and
I
it's
used
almost
to
as but
I was going to say
go on.
I used to watch those and be absolutely terrified and
Yeah.
think it was tremendously realistic, and now you watch back and think, oh my God, that's terrible.
I was going to say it's almost as bad as our YouTube video about Alton Barnes. In fact, I'd hesitate to say ours was even more professional than BBC's attempt at Doctor Who all those years ago.
Good. Well,
Anyway, there you go.
so gosh, we have wobbled on this week, haven't we? So we better wrap up, hadn't we?
So thanks as ever to Steve Dixon for the music. The middle bit was called, what was it called?
Round the Downs.
Round the Downs. I wonder why. So that's that. And the first bit is the opening bit is the Holloway as ever. Thanks, Steve. Next episode is Sunday, the 6th of November, by my reckoning. I will
Will
be
you
back
be
from
back by
France,
then?
but I will, but not only for a week or two. So whether I'll get a chance to go out and do more walks, I don't know. The website for show notes, links, and the online shop, if you can be tempted.
Yes. So, thanks everyone for listening along to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast, and we'll see you in 1 month's time. Bye everyone.
Bye for now. Bye bye.